Open the gates up. Hey, screw, did you miss me? Jimmy, I see that you found a new friend. Warden, come down here and kiss me hello, 'cause I'm back home in Huntsville again.
Welkom bij de Prison Show, het programma over delict, straf, herstel en terugkeer.
Oprecht, onafhankelijk en baanbrekend.
Want iedereen heeft recht van spreken en verdient erkenning voor wie hij of zij is.
Met Edwin
en Frans.
Yes, I'm back home in Huntsville again.
Kijken ze eraan, Frans, wat ik voor je heb aangestoken?
Dat zijn firecrackers from New Year's Eve.
Ja. Happy New Year. Gelukkig nieuwjaar, Frans.
Thank you.
De beste wensen voor 2020. En we gaan een hele mooie podcast maken. En we beginnen gelijk weer zo vlak aan het begin van het nieuwe jaar. We hebben geen winterstop. We gaan gewoon door. En wie gaan we vandaag interviewen?
We're going to interview Kathleen McFerrin. We're very happy to have you in the show, Kathleen. Kathleen is from the neighborhood of Seattle, but probably you can tell yourself, introduce yourself to the listeners of our show.
Thank you. I'm really happy to be here. I am from the Pacific Northwest in the United States, and I've spent the last about 18 years trying to figure out how do we create more peace on the planet, and particularly just wondering how do we go inside prisons and find out from our brothers and sisters inside how do we live together in peace and what will it take. And so I've been going inside with the Freedom Project for many years now and found that that's been life transformative for me.
Mm-hmm. And how did you get the idea to do something in prisons?
Partly because I met Marshall Rosenberg in 2001, and he's the founder of the Center for Nonviolent Communication. Mm-hmm. So he has a body of work, nonviolent communication, that has helped me find ways to articulate and be connected to the things that I most value, mm-hmm. and then live out of those values. And so when I became a certified trainer, the assessor, Lucy Liu, said, great, now you're coming inside prison with me. And she's the one who started the program. And from that moment on, I haven't been willing to stop.
So great. And can you tell the listeners, because we know what NVC is, but please could you explain it to the listeners of our show?
I wish that question were easy to answer. Mm-hmm. To me, nonviolent communication is really, it's more like a process or a framework that helps me just be clear about what deeply matters to me. And then to use those answers, those principles that I find to guide my thoughts and my words and my actions. Mm-hmm. So to be more specific, at the core of nonviolent communication, there's this awareness that we are undeniably interdependent on this planet. Meaning that I can never meet my needs at the expense of yours, and you can never meet yours at the expense of mine. So nonviolent communication helps me understand that our safety and our ability to thrive is actually entwined. We're stuck together. And then once I realize that, my world completely changes. Mm-hmm. Because now I have to find strategies that keep all of us safe. Because the cost is too great otherwise. So nonviolent communication is sort of a map, an inner map for me to find out what matters most to me and how do I live according to that. And this understanding that we all share this basic common human needs around the planet. And when we connect on that level, that we can find strategies that keep everybody safe. Mm-hmm.
Keep everybody safe, and then you're getting into a situation which is, from its nature, unsafe, a prison. And you work with people who everybody outside thinks they are dangerous and they're violent, you know? And there you go with your nonviolent communication message or course. So do all the inmates take part of the course, or do you have a sort of selection, or do they voluntarily say that they want it? How is that process within the prison?
I'd love to answer that, but I really enjoy what you said first. I'd like to respond to that, this idea that people are violent and we need to put them and lock them up in prison. Yeah. Nonviolent communication invites us to look at violence as a tragic expression of unmet needs.
Mm-hmm.
And also to look at violence as what is our internal mindset that out of which violence arises. And so part of the work of nonviolent communication is to really look at our violent thinking that then can lead to violent action. So in some ways, all of us are capable of violence as a possible response to tension or unmet needs. And so the idea is, how do we create strategies in which we can deal with that tension in ways that are still safe for everyone, that meet the needs of all people? And so one of the things that we do in Washington State prisons is there are many, many volunteer community programs that come in and support incarcerated individuals. And one of those programs, I believe it's an international program called Alternatives to Violence.
Mm-hmm.
And at one point in time, they invited Marshall Rosenberg to come in, and Lucy Liu accompanied him. And one of the incarcerated men at the time said, he grabbed Lucy and said, "Lucy, we absolutely have to have this inside prison.
Mm-hmm.
What can we do?" And Marshall, of course, was taking off and going to other countries in the world. So in 2001, Lucy Liu started the program inside. And we bring in mindfulness, and we bring in nonviolent communication. And as of a few years ago, we've also added racial equity and anti-oppression work because of the prison pipeline that we have in the United States. And so on the inside, these are programs in which the incarcerated men and women can sign up for. And so it's a voluntary sign up. We've really requested that. Though the counselors that are there really enjoy our program, so they encourage people that they're working with on the inside to sign up.
Okay. But and so I understand that the idea came from the incarcerated people themselves. The first idea.
Yes, once they met Marshall and Lucy, yes.
Yeah.
And then it spread like a virus, but a positive virus.
A positive fire, and it still spreads by word of mouth. Mm.
Yeah. So, and who is paying for these courses? Is the state doing that, or?
Unfortunately not. These courses are all volunteer run. And so the Freedom Project for many, many years worked completely as volunteers. And the courses are actually taught by volunteers, a combination of volunteers that come from the outside. And also on the inside, we have mentors that have been studying this for a while that also will collaborate with the outside volunteers and share NBC. Freedom Project is developed as a nonprofit organization at this time. And so they do receive some funding and have staff people at this point in time.
Okay.
But none of it comes from the state.
No, I understand. Well, it's already very nice for a prison system that the state allows nonviolent communication to be done in the prison, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yes. So many of the programs, so much of the support that the people incarcerated here received from the outside, because the state doesn't provide that many programs.
Mm-hmm. I understand. So particularly initiative, volunteers, and I understand. So I'm very curious about the impact of the course on the incarcerated people, especially.
Yeah, that,
is it
I think
different
this is
from
like
outside? Sorry, is it different from people outside?
It's such an interesting question. In some ways, the trainings and the workshops and the communities that we create, the experiences we have, the questions that we look at are so similar on the inside and the outside. Mm. When I'm actually doing the work, I can't really tell the difference. And yet there is something on the inside because of the degree of tragedy and the degree of the living situations that they're in that gives so much poignancy to the actual work on the inside. There's an amazing amount of courage and inspiration that shows up that sometimes takes longer for me to get to on the outside.
Mm-hmm.
And so I do have hundreds of anecdotal kind of stories where there's been shifts in perspectives, where there's been some personal healing around some pain, where there's been like a new understanding that's come out that's motivated the understanding about why they did what they did to get them into prison and that there are new choices available.
Mm-hmm.
There's been stories when one of the incarcerated men came in after near the end of a 3-day workshop and he came back in after a visit from his wife and he said, "You guys have just saved my marriage." We said, "What are you talking about?" And he said his wife had shown up with divorce papers.
Mm-hmm.
And he started doing his old routine of defending himself once again.
Mm-hmm.
And he thought, "Wow, I've been sitting in this class for 2 or 3 days. I better use what I've learned." And he started empathizing with her instead. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the visit, she took back the divorce papers and said, "I do not want you to sign these. You're a changed man."
Fantastic.
And I know that that's just a small one relationship, but so many men and women I've talked to have changed relationships with their children. They've healed relationships where violence has broken those relationships apart. Mm-hmm. And then they also, on the inside, create communities that become more safe for themselves and others.
Incredible. Yeah.
The other part of the impact, if you prefer like studies and data, is we had one study done in 2014 by Antioch University.
Mm-hmm.
And what they found is that the recidivism rate at the time in the state of Washington was 37% for the general prison population. But for those who had gone through Freedom Project training, the recidivism rate was 21%. So that's a significant drop, I think around 44%. And put into financial terms, the state of Washington saved $5 million a year.
Mm-hmm.
By that drop in recidivism.
That's very interesting.
The study also,
that's very interesting, especially for the policymakers and the people from the politicians who listen to this program, to hear they love figures like this.
I think politicians only think, oh, that costs money all the time. But if you see what it brings back to you, then it only saves you money. And saves you lives that you make greater, lives that get spent better, and
well, think about
it brings so much more. Yeah.
Think about the women and the children of the people who are incarcerated, their friends, their parents.
It multiplies and multiplies and multiplies. Yeah,
yeah, fantastic. I really
exactly.
want
to
have the link to that report to share that on our website.
I'll send that. I'll send that, definitely. I think that $5 million was simply the amount of money that they saved by not paying the $98 a day for them to be in prison.
Mm-hmm.
And so imagine the amount of money in addition to that where people didn't need to go into therapy or they didn't need to rebuild their mm-hmm. homes or their stolen cars or the medical expenses that were involved when people were hurt. So I'm sure that figure is much greater.
Yeah, I'm sure.
If we were to take in the accounts of everything.
Very nice. Very nice.
The study also found improvement in things like self-reported anger and self-compassion. And then there's certain forms of mindfulness that the people who'd gone through the training had access to. And so the increased social skills were significantly different than those of the general prison population with matched controls. Mm-hmm. And what I find interesting is that the benefits showed up with as little as 8 hours of training.
8 hours?
For me, that seems incredible. 8 hours.
Just one day.
But the more training that somebody had, the better the results, because it's a lived practice. It's a way of being. So, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Fantastic. And I'm very interested in how the people in the other people in the system reacted, like the staff, the guards, the management. How did they react on this training, on the fact that you gave this training, and how did they react on the people who've been there?
Yeah, as far as I can tell, the Freedom Project is highly respected amongst the staff, and that for several years, the counselors, like inside program, like one of the prisons that we work in has the sex offender treatment program for the state of Washington. Mm-hmm. And so the counselors there in particular have really appreciated what we've done and have suggested that their clients go through our trainings. It supports a lot of the healing and rehabilitation work that they do. Mm-hmm. I remember asking one officer when I was in the women's prison once, like, do you ever notice a difference, like, after we leave? Because I'm always wondering, I don't want to just do a workshop and leave and really, it was a nice experience, but doesn't have a lasting impact. Mm-hmm. And he said, oh, yes, you can tell for several weeks after you're gone that the rate of incidences and violence drops. And we've never done a study on that, but I would love to learn more about that and mm-hmm. wonder.
Because I think when you practice a situation, then the next day during lunch and you have interaction with the other people in the prison, then you recognize situations. And then you think that's where the click starts. And then you think, hey, this is what we practiced, and now I see how I can solve things differently and come up with different solutions.
But I can imagine that it also can give different and bad reactions, because, you know, there are destructive tendencies in every prison in the world, so also in the United States and in your environment. And, you know, when people have a way to approach you in a different way, you know, it also can inflict aggression and repression and stuff like that, because the environment is also run by mechanisms like fear and oppression and separating groups from each other and stuff like that. So me personally, I think the best way to deal with it is to train the staff and the management at the same time, you know?
Yeah. Yes, that would be so wonderful. And what you're speaking to is really core to the process of nonviolent communication. Mm-hmm. It's this idea that if we all have these basic human needs, that when we learn strategies that are actually meet our needs more fully, that those are the strategies that we'll gravitate toward. Mm-hmm. And so if my old strategy of violence, it might meet some needs, but at a high cost and expense to other needs. Or it might meet some needs, but just for a very short amount of time. And so when we learn other strategies, and it's like, oh, this situation's here again, but there's an alternative now. I can choose something different. That has such a powerful impact on our learning. And as you said, really deeply influences the people around us in terms of the responses and options that they see available at the time, too.
So you didn't experience that people sometimes have a lot of problems practicing their NVC in the prison environment?
Oh, yes, of course there are lots of problems. I have lots of problems from the outside practicing my NVC.
Yeah.
Practice. And simply because it really is a different orientation. It's fundamentally a different way of looking at life. Mm-hmm. It's because there are some basic core assumptions that we all share these universal needs and basic core assumptions that we all have compassionate nature. Mm-hmm. And so There's been a lot of training about an idea that we're actually separate and not interdependent. Mm-hmm. And so inside an environment such as prison, where you're not just separate, but you have to fight for so many things, this is a very radical change. And so I wish you had the voices besides mine to really answer this question about what their lives have been like. But the stories that I've heard over and over and over, when they suggest another alternative to fighting, they suggest another option in a system, in a place where the systems are dehumanizing, when they bring the humanity in, it actually brings in a degree of soul force. Yeah. That nonviolence, that soul force, brings in a kind of power that previously wasn't there. Mm-hmm. And it's incredible that once there is a taste of that power and how it shifts, that can then be used even in a prison environment.
Yeah. I really, I pose the question, but I really believe in what you say, because I haven't experienced NVC in prisons, but the mechanism of the way you treat people and how you interact with each other changes everything. I've seen it lots of times with all categories of incarcerated people. Mm-hmm. People with a life sentence, people who were psychotic, people who were considered incredibly dangerous. It always works. And it's nice to hear somebody telling the same story, It's a very basic human mechanism which works with all of us. Yeah.
Yeah. When we see each other's humanity and we see, we're offered kindness, we're offered understanding.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think Marshall Rosenberg, the founder of this work, was clear that this was nothing new. As you're saying right now, it's we're wired for compassion, we're wired for connection, and so this is just a particular map that I find useful so that I can practice that more regularly, and get back to my own humanity and the humanity of others when I get further away.
Mm. Well, I think you had you gave us a very a few very good hints about how to continue with this in Holland.
And looking forward to the future, this is spreading. This movement is growing within the prison system. What do you foresee for the future? This getting bigger, and how, and what does it need to keep growing?
One of the things that I find is that all over the world, that when people hear stories of that shared connection that happens inside prison, that these programs to bring NVC into prisons is really spreading around the world in many places. So I'm just interested in restorative justice, no matter what the methodology and the mechanism is. Mm-hmm. It's like, how can we just, long before people ever arrived into prison, learn to offer the kind of support so our basic human needs can be met more of the time in nonviolent ways.
And I saw that you did a TED talk. Did that help? Did it help much to get more people to know about this? And did you get some special reactions you'd like to share with us?
I don't know the answer to that, because I don't know. Sometimes things go out into the ether, out into the cosmos. I don't know.
Yeah, but you reach a lot of people with a TED talk, I think. So
you reached us.
Anyway. You reached us anyway. So in the Netherlands, in Germany, Japan, I don't know where. But you might have reached a lot of people and that may have benefited the cause of the movement. So,
do you know if there is NVC in other parts of the United States?
In prisons, the prison system?
In prisons.
Yes, absolutely. There's big programs in California and Oregon. Mm-hmm. And we're starting a program. There's an incarcerated man in Oklahoma that has been studying NVC for years and years and has been teaching his other his other colleagues inside, and also on the eastern part of the United States, there are several. And many of those programs started because they heard about Freedom Project, or they heard just some of us who go inside talking about our experiences, just how amazing it is to have this life experience of being with another human being during the dark days and figuring out ways to move forward.
I will talk about it when I'm in Texas in February. You know, I go to the to death row and to several prisons as well. And actually in one prison, a friend of mine, he does a life sentence, and he he and a friend of him give courses to other incarcerated people for many years now to become a better person within the situation they're in, like becoming a better father and a better friend and stuff like that. Very, very impressive and very powerful. And I'm definitely going to talk about MVC with them. Definitely, yeah.
Oh, that's amazing. I feel really inspired and touched to hear that. That no matter what the life experience is that sense of finding meaning and purpose to contribute to other human beings, no matter where you are, even if you have no hope of getting out of prison.
Oh, very nice. Yeah. I feel very inspired right now as well. And I was very touched about what you told about the impact as well. And, well, when I'm in Texas, we will make podcasts as well. I will make podcasts
as
well.
You will bring the recorder, yeah.
The listeners will hear more about this. Well, I think we're about the end, at the end of the questions. Is there something you want to tell us or our listeners about your experience or something we forgot to ask?
I noticed that my heart is really very, very full. And so, yes, there's so much, but it's really, it comes from my longing for each one of us to reach out to one another, like to be able to find a way to see the humanity, and reaching out earlier, creating conditions in which people aren't punished, but people actually get the support they need when there's conflict. And so I think I would just invite the listeners to find ways to reach out to send some care, some kindness to people within their own communities.
Well, I'm sure there are a lot of listeners who are touched by what you say, and also very much long for this situation, for a more human world, you know, more close contact with people. We are more with all those destructive mechanisms. A lot of people are fed up with that, I think.
Yeah. And for me, it's not just because I love the kindness and connection, but it's the practical. Like I really fear that if we continue to lock people up and teach them how to be more violent, that all of us are less safe. So really finding other alternatives.
I agree.
Kathleen, I want my children, everyone's children, to be safe.
Yeah. Yes, Kevin, yes. Thank you so much.
It's finally all about
you've been,
children.
You've been so kind to us. You've been so kind.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for the work you're doing.
Have a nice day, and hopefully we meet again. Thank you.
Yes, I would like that too.
And make this a great year for communication, non-violent.
Well, I have a 2020 vision. Marshall used to say he has 2020 vision. And his 2020 vision was that in the year 2020, that the needs of all people on the planet would be met. So this is it. This is our year.
Yeah, thank you.
So why not start with those inside?
So it will be quite the year then.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Kathleen.
Thank you.
Okay.
En tot zover ons gesprek met Kathleen McFerrin.
Ja. Ik ben wel onder de indruk, hoor.
Inspiring dame. Ik begin een beetje nog half Engels, half Nederlands. Maar het is eigenlijk allemaal zo als het erover heeft, denk ik, ja, dat zit zo dichtbij. Maar het is zo natuurlijk eigenlijk, zo normaal waar ze het over heeft. Maar, want we zijn allemaal maar mensen, maar toch...
Precies, maar de luisteraar
draait de maatschappij heeft, heel anders en draait daar soms om andere dingen. En het is toch even goed om dat er mensen hiermee bezig zijn.
Het is ontzettend belangrijk. En wat de luisteraar natuurlijk niet gezien heeft, maar misschien een beetje gehoord, dat is dat het een hele stralende, energieke...
Ja, we zagen haar op persoon is. We zagen haar op de Skype.
Net. Ja, want we waren aan Skype.
We hadden een beetje oogcontact en dan zie je een beetje meer het non-verbale erbij. Dat is ook wel eens leuk in een gesprek zo. Als je niet in dezelfde studio kan zitten vanwege de grote afstand.
Precies.
Ja, nou, ik denk dat we weer een mooie podcast hebben gemaakt. Dat we een mooi begin hebben gemaakt aan 2020.
Zo is het.
Volgende week nog een keer.
Zeker weten.
Tot volgende week.
Tot volgende week. Hoi.
Yes, I'm back home in Huntsville again.